Turn my yet.
No.
You gotta do it all over again.
Run through it again, cause.
No. Oh, do you have?
Just like you did in the beginning.
No, we're okay.
Everybody's here.
Okay.
Except for.
Except for. All right. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. First on the agenda this afternoon, we actually have three ordinances. The first two complement one another, and the third is a separate ordinance dealing with our emergency management. And what I'd like to do is to call on our emergency management coordinator, Dave Carpenter, to touch on all three of them as far as our federal funding, private funding, and also county contribution towards the various programs of emergency management. So, Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Carpenter, Jr., Emergency Management Coordinator.
Feel free to sit down the end if you want.
Sorry, I feel better standing.
Okay.
The three ordinances before you just appropriate are basically our operating funds for the year, in addition to some project funding that we have that we get each year on each federal grant year. Simple way to explain it is we get $320,000 a year on the federal grant. We have to match that with the county dollars. That's the appropriating or the operating budget that you all approved back at the end of May, May's meeting. That gets now moved over to the grant budget for us to operate for the year. The federal portion gets split up into two divisions. One's operational, the other one is project. The operational money we use throughout the year from October 1 until September 30th, so our federal year kind of crosses over our county fiscal year. It makes financing very interesting during the year and budgeting. The other funding that operates us during the year is the private funding from the Salem Hope Creek Nuclear Generating Station, which funds a portion, most of the portion of the salary of the one planner that predominantly does that work. The other additional money that you see, the $75,000 ordinance, is appropriating the additional, the rest of the $320,000 that we get each fiscal year. As you see under the operational, we're only appropriating like $245 or $250 for this year. And then next year, when we start to utilize the rest of the federal money, we'll appropriate that in that time period.
Any questions from council? Councilor Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, are these funds always from, these particular funds that we're dealing with today, are they always from the same federal agency as FEMA and PSCG?
Yes. Yeah, these are the, I mean, for 34, 35 years now, our office has been funded by the same funding mechanism. It's federal FEMA, Emergency Management Performance Grant, which is one of the more solidified and permanent, just about, I don't want to say permanent grants, but just about a permanent grant in the federal government. It has a large support network amongst the International Association of Emergency Managers, the International Chiefs of Police, International Fire Chiefs, and the International Firefighters Association. Since across the nation, emergency management agencies sit in a varied positions within their government. Some of them sit within the sheriff's department. Some of them sit.
I'll probably do that too occasionally.
Any very specific?
Is there one there?
I had nothing.
We can rewind that, right?
Take it from the record.
Don't take it. Don't put it on me. You got that right here, Dave.
Some of them sit within fire departments, so you know that's why it's very widely supported. It gets funded federally at about $330 to $340 million a year, and that gets divvied up by the state and then the county governments.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Dave. Appreciate very much. Going to ordinance 13-060.
Send your copy to Tate.
Amend the fiscal year 2013 approved operating budget, appropriate $1,972,933 of state of Delaware funding to the Department of Public Safety for the Newcastle County Police Employees Retirement System. Councilman Cartier?
Yes, thank you. Give me that ordinance number again, please.
Ordinance 13-060.
Thank you. Had to just scroll it down on my screen. All right. Some people resist
been
progress.
One of the more interesting public safety committee.
Yes. This amount of $1,972,933 represents funding to our public employee, police, county police retirement system that is passed through by state government. So it's a great assistance to us in funding our pensions for county police. And, you know, I think this comes forward every year, and it's based on maybe we can get some lifeline on this, some answers. The funding basis for this originates, I think, with some.
There's an application process that HR goes through. We get funding twice a year, and it's based on a number of officers and some other items. Just to know that this money, this is money that at any time we've always been told that the state could take away from us, from all the governments. All the governments get to apply for this local money for their own pensions. But again, it's money that at some point in time the state decided not to do this anymore. It's possible that could happen. But this is money that's generated, I think, from the insurance fees. That will
that's
be.
It. And is this varied in amount tremendously?
Yeah,
or
it varies depending on the amount of money that the state collects for on that insurance fees. And again, it's an application process that each municipality goes through. And it's based, again, on a number of officers and some other information that they require.
Thank you.
Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ed, this is just a contribution to the pension fund? I mean, it's not like a... it's not paying 50% of it or nothing like that.
No,
it's just whatever
it's just
they come
a contribution.
Up with.
And the reason it goes, you've seen it this way. About 4 or 5 years ago, our auditors recommended. It used to go directly from the state into the pension fund, but the auditors recommended that we show it coming into the county first, and then the county passing it on to the pension fund. So that's why we do this ordinance at this time of year all the time.
Any other questions from council? Okay, hearing none, we have Chief Miller here today to give us an update on Smart 911. Chief? And Director Brian, of course, is with us every meeting, and we had worked on the agenda and everything, and he had set up for the Chief to be here today to give us an update.
No, please.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor. As you know, on Tuesday the 25th, we had our press conference for Smart 911. Everyone in the sitting council is very well familiar with the product. It was very well attended. It was attended by all the police, all seven police jurisdictions that we represent within Newcastle County. We printed up 5,000 business cards and a little over 800 flyers. Currently today, we've distributed 1,000 business cards, 400 flyers. And as of this morning, we have just over 800 people registered with a public safety profile with Smart 911. So our goal was 1,000 people in the first month. We've accomplished 800 in the first 2 weeks. So that's promising. We're currently looking at the next step and the next stages of Smart 911 is a responder portal in which all the police cars and responding agencies, that be it EMS or fire trucks that have laptops inside them. We're going to conduct training over the next 2 months. Then they will be able to access a responder portal. And if there is information specific to a Smart 911 profile, they'll be able to log on out in the field and get the information themselves rather than have us give it delivered to them over the air. We're also working with partner websites through the fire departments and other police departments, so they're putting the Smart 911 advertisement and the banners on websites. Delaware City, I think Christiana Fire Company and Claymont Fire Company have already offered to do that for us as well. We're also partnering with churches and communities to get our flyers out and to attend community events with our command post. It was at the Ice Cream Festival both days. And we handed out most of the flyers that we had printed up there. So we expect to see maybe the numbers increase in the next few weeks. At the 30-day mark, we will go ahead and do a Facebook and Twitter blast. At the 60-day mark, we intend to have an audio PSA ready for all the radio stations. And at the 90-day mark, it is our goal to have a 2-minute video PSA ready to go out on the county TV channel. With that, I'm welcome to any questions that you may have.
Now, we had the, and I always call it an honor and privilege to attend the press conference. Councilman Retta, Councilwoman Diller, and myself And I know others, depending on what our schedules are, as to whether we're available to actually attend. But we did attend. It was very well done as far as the presentation. And I don't know whether it would be possible to maybe take a small amount of the little business cards, if you have sufficient numbers of them, and provide them maybe to each one of the council representatives, because we attend a tremendous amount of public meetings. The little business cards, I mean, even just a little stack of them, to where if we mention about it and be able to hand out the business cards, it's like a flyer in itself, because, I mean, it's very well done, the front and the back, and it explains it and everything. So, you know, that might be a possibility to help us with a little, you know, community public relations and things.
We'd greatly appreciate the opportunity, so I'll make sure you get the business cards.
That's very, very well done. They had a press conference adjacent, in the emergency operations center, adjacent to the 911 center, and the family who, up in the Brandywine Hunter area, that had the a misfortune with a family member, losing a family member, was present. But very well done. Very well done presentation. Councilman Tackett, and then Councilman Street, and then Director Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we looking at this program also to, like, and I guess in a sense, complement our other programs, or in a sense, take over, like, the Ball of Life type thing? I mean, you know, the responders can go in, you know, I guess they have something, and then they can just check real quick, you know, for, I guess, where they put in the refrigerator or whatever, and all. Where this, I guess, the responder would have to physically log on to something in order to get the information?
Yeah. They would have to log into what's called a responder portal via some type of web access, and typically through their laptop that's available in their response vehicle. Our goal is to have it augment the service of what the paramedics already have in place with the Vial of Life. We do see it replacing, probably, if we can get the numbers, our current premise history that's available in our CAD system. That's something we're responsible for maintaining. We only keep the information accurate for 365 days, and it automatically purges itself. This way, the public can go create their public safety profile, and then they're reminded by the system every 6 months to update it themselves, so we know we have good, accurate information.
Mm-hmm. I know a few years ago there was another program that was kind of, seemed like it was doing very well through the nation, but I haven't heard about it in a couple of years. But it was a certain kind of switch and a light that the people would put on their front porch.
Yes.
And when they called, you would activate that.
We would tell them to activate the light.
So they wouldn't be trying to locate where that house or where.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's still available. I do know that the Delaware Information, DE911.org, they currently have throughout the state of Delaware 4,000 registered participants. And that has kind of faltered over the past 5 or 6 years. It's never really grown.
Hmm. I think from the perspective of the light, emergency light, that you could put it on, that kind of evolved into encouraging everyone to have proper identification on your mailbox in front of your home, because one of the things were that you could go down a street, and if you didn't see a house number, so, you know, I think that with the street addressing and trying to get things that are highly visible, so that when first responders are responding, that they've got a good fix on them.
And I don't think we enforce it a whole much, but it's actually a county code that you're supposed to.
Right.
Not well used.
Yeah.
Councilman Street?
A lot of people, especially younger people, don't have ground lines in the house and utilize strictly cell phone tower. Incorporated in this.
Actually, the benefit to having a smart 911 profile is specifically targeted to, it's good for landlines, but specifically targeted to a cell phone. And I used the same example for WDEL last week. If someone were to call from Stratford Apartments and they were unable to communicate verbally to a 911 call operator, their cell phone is going to put them somewhere between Target and somewhere between the development of Devonshire. And for as many buildings as is within Stratford Apartments, as many floors and apartments, we would never get any specific areas to where the person actually lives. If the person was registered on a cell phone with a smart 911 profile and they gave their address and their apartment number, that would give us a really good location to start looking. So the benefits are, you know, far supersede to the cell phone side as it does landline.
Okay, Captain. Director Bryant?
Chairman, Chair Bryant. First, the news conference, those who attended, it was probably one of the best that I've attended in a while, in that you had three of our chiefs at the podium at one point talking about this program, and I've never seen that before. So I applaud first our acting chief for pulling it together, and then support that he got from the other divisions. And number two, one thing that we're going to do, in addition to those things that Jeff talked about, we're going to request to come to your district meetings, your meetings within your district, and bring those cards and those flyers, but more importantly, send the expert there to answer questions and make, you know, a lot of elderly folks are very reluctant to give out their information. I think if Jeff is there and he talks to these folks, they will understand that it's something that's secure, confidential, all those good things, and get them enrolled. It's much like if you remember a senior roll call. It's still alive, it works, it's doing well. I think this complements it. Now, I'm not sure if it will replace it, but it's a very special program. So I think it's a great thing, a great tool that we're going to really promote extremely hard over the next couple of months to get it out there, to get everyone locked in. A real good thing, and he mentioned churches, we have one of our technicians, Fred Massey. He's going to churches, he's going to senior centers, he's promoting it on his own. That's how impressed he is with this piece of software. So again, I want to applaud Jeff for, I know it wasn't necessarily his idea, but he put everything into motion, and more importantly, put together a very powerful news conference last week, so the week before.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, then Councilman Street.
Thank you. Again, congratulations. Is this something that we can help you with through our websites or our newsletters that we send out through email? Can we give a site?
Absolutely.
Can you?
We can get you the link. And
okay.
More importantly, I also have the artwork available in PDF format.
Great.
If you can email it to your communities.
Okay, good. Can you send that to either us or?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Councilman Street?
Just wondering if the administration is considering maybe dropping some of this information in the bills that are going to go out pretty soon.
Well, that's an excellent idea. We were getting ready to, we're trying to partner with Delmarva to accomplish that in utility bills, but that's something we should be looking at. Yes, sir.
We're definitely going to do the utility bill. We've talked to Vince
Giacona
the other day, and he's definitely going to do what he can to get it in there. But more importantly, if we can get out any other way through the county bill and the bill.
I think as community partnerships, as Councilman Street and the directors mentioned, you know, a couple of things that, I mean, right off the bat, you talk about Amber Alerts and a child that was in the front yard. Next thing you know, mother sees somebody snatching the child. That information's in the system. They'll be able to transmit that to the responding officers with actually a photo of the child, description and photo of the child. So we talk about, you know, the next generation of 911 and being able to, the technology and being able to ship data out and everything. This thing has unlimited possibilities in the future and everything. Ed Miller.
Just on the follow-up, Ed Miller, on the tax bills, just remember that 50% of the people do not get tax bills, the other 50% do, because the mortgage company pays those. So it's something we could have to think about. And even the sewer bill is even a good idea also, because everybody gets a sewer bill, too. Something to think about.
Dave, did you have anything?
Hey, Dave Parker.
Just Jeff turned this on to the, there's another module with the program that him and I discussed. It's called EM Prepare, and it's off the Smart 911 system. We just actually were able to hold a demo today with the company on it to give us, but it's the emergency management side of the program. We can basically utilize the information that the person is putting in the secure database to do evacuation planning, sheltering information, and then also pre-planning as far as notifying them of events and understanding where there's persons with disabilities or mental challenges, et cetera, on that side of it. We just did a demo. It looks pretty good as far as the product goes. It's just some tweaks and obviously funding as far as the cost goes.
Any other question or comment from council? I just close with one thing on this topic, and you know, the director got up and made mention about the division chiefs being there. Colonel Setting, Chief Tan, you know, Dave was there, and everyone got up and talked about how this application kind of facilitates and comes into play with all the first responders, all with the emergency services. Good representation from the fire department, the volunteer fire service there that day. But I give, and this ain't blowing smoke, this is fact, that we've got a director that's empowering division chiefs to not only do their job, but to partner together. And that's important for a successful public safety department.
Absolutely. Is that all, sir?
Thank you, Chief.
All right, thank you.
Chief Setting, Combat Property Crime Initiative.
Good afternoon, everyone. The update on the academy first, sir, or any particular order?
The floor is yours, sir.
At present, we have the Esri maps that we use through our Omega software to measure the amount of crime that is registered in the CAD. Basically, in layman's terms, it reads and analyzes all 911 calls and then tells us where the most quality of life crime is occurring. We respond to those areas in the hopes of being there as or before the crime occurs. And that's been a very good initiative, and it's been successful. However, we need to take the next step, and the next step is to put property crime on those maps. The agency that's doing this is Tampa, Florida. They have a sustained 60% reduction in all crime across the city. Didn't happen in 5 minutes. But it did happen, and it is sustainable. We are going down there to see how exactly the pieces to the puzzle work, how they put the property crime on the maps. We know what type of software they're using. We are going to purchase that software and put property crime up on the map. Just as a side point, why property crime? Because the number one concern, based on the online surveys of our constituents, is property crime. Yet, the 370 authorized police officers, we load down 6 detectives with the responsibility of investigating property crime. It's not looked at as a serious crime, yet people end up feeling very violated when someone breaks into their car or their home. And we can't expect 6 detectives being used as pack mules to investigate all the burglaries that are occurring in Newcastle County, not to mention the thefts of motor vehicles, all loaded into this one shop. Property crime is driven by the drug trade, in particular the heroin trade. We have another 6 detectives that are responsible for investigating the drug crime in Newcastle County. Another huge concern of our council and our constituents is the drugs and the, you know, again, driven by the property. So we have 12 people that are looking at the 2 biggest crimes in Newcastle County. The whole approach to this is archaic, and we have to change it. So we have invested detectives into the property crime division so that those guys don't feel, you know, ill-used. We have invested in our drug control unit so that we have more drug control police officers out there making undercover buys that leads to the arrest, that leads to the search warrants, such as the 4 that we just served in Kemerton over this last week, taking out 4 major drug dealers in Kemerton, including prescription drugs. And the final piece to the property crime initiative is the special investigative team inside of the criminal investigations unit. Historically, this is a reactive unit, and they wait for the crime to occur. For the first time in the history of the county police, we have put a proactive piece inside the criminal investigations unit. This is the SIS team, special investigations. They will analyze crime trends, basically look at all property crime. As soon as they see a trend, they'll respond. They're not assigned cases. Their job is to go out and actually locate the people doing the property crime. So again, we've already had multiple success stories in the short 3 weeks that SIS has been up and running. They've already apprehended burglars based on their pawning history. And it's a very effective tool. The more important piece of it is, it leaves the drug unit to do drug work. and not go out and try and find burglars doing surveillance, because that's what we end up doing. When we identify a particular person in a particular vehicle, we have to watch them and wait for them to do the next burglary so that we can get probable cause for a search warrant to go into their home and find stolen property. Can't just walk up and knock and say, I think you're a burglar. The liar, liar, pants on fire approach doesn't work. So you got to prove it. So the whole drug unit ends up doing burglary crime. They should be doing drug work. So SIS will now take over that piece of it. Drugs will focus on drugs. These new maps will come in from Esri. We're going to put, for those of you that have been to a TAPS meeting, many of you have been to many of them, thank you. We're going to put up the actual property crime on the boards, and we're going to start assigning it the same way we assign quality of life issues. And I believe we're going to break through the 15% in all reduced crime and the 12% reduction in all calls for service. We're going to break through that that barrier, and we're going to reduce it again. That's the plan, in short.
Chief Councilwoman Diller and then Councilman Street.
One of the things you've mentioned in the TAPS meeting is the overlay of the probationers on top of the crime statistics. Will this software used by the City of Tampa, will that give you the capacity to add those folks into the mix as well as the property crimes? I'm just thinking, does that make...
It's all feasible, and I'm one of those folks that tell me it can't be done, and you just make me crazy. Now I just want to do it. And I've already said it's going to be really hard to do it, but it can be done. You just have to partner with PMP, which we've made to moved in that direction. PMP is invited into our TAPS meeting. With probation and paroles data, we will be able to overlay it, and it, we have done it, essentially. The problem that you have is so much of it is transient that it leaves you chasing your tails. So I don't want to put so much stock in that that, you know, now we know where they are. What's more important is to look at your top, what we call mega burglars. Okay, as soon as they get out of prison, the lion's share of these folks go right back to doing property crime. It's what they know, and it usually gets them what they need, which is cash for drugs. So you have to actually track them when they're released from DOD. You know, when they're released from prison. But those are you have to track. Now we know our top. I'll say we know our top 20 mega burglars. We actually have a mega burglar slideshow that if you guys were so inclined, we'd put it on for you. We would have to redact names and dates of birth based on Delgis. But other than that, I mean, we have a program right now where we're tracking those burglars. And I am going to overlay the PMP to answer the question. I just wouldn't look at that and say that's the cleanest data in the world. And it's certainly you can't hold against them that they're on probation.
Right.
You have to take into consideration some people go out and they reclaim their lives. And always that's the hope.
Councilman Street?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and Chief can't do a whole lot about this, but I just want to raise, you know, over the last few years I've heard a host of law enforcement officials maintain the view that we can't arrest our way out of this. My position that I've stated publicly on numerous occasions, well, we probably can't arrest our way out of it, but we sure as heck try to arrest our way into it. Having said that, I'm going to preface this by saying I have no scientific data to corroborate the statement. But it appears from what I'm hearing on the street and what I'm seeing in the police reports that we all get, that there is a significant increase in apparently some changes of choice of drugs to heroin, and heroin's getting serious. And, you know, we ask them to do a certain job and arrest their way into it, but I think we have, as a government, an equal responsibility to partner with others to help prevent the use of drugs and illicit substances. And what most folks don't want to face the harsh reality is for over 90% of the drug addicts in the country, the initial drug of choice was marijuana, and it leads to something else. And yet, as a state, we have
not giving the kind of attention to drug prevention that I think we need to give it to. We had a DARE program, which I thought was outstanding in all our schools. It no longer exists. And I don't know what we're doing day-to-day prevention-wise, but until we do prevention on one end and treatment on the other, then the role and function of his 370 is going to continue to be extremely challenging and get worse before it gets better. So I just want to appreciate what you do, and I think we got to arrest our way into it, but we can't arrest our way out of it. And there are some prevention things and some treatment things that are part and parcel of it if we're going to look toward resolution.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Are you going to property crimes? Does this include graffiti?
Well, graffiti is already up on those charts that we use right now, Councilwoman, as it's really a quality of life crime.
Okay, so
it's really no. There's not a. You know, I wonder if that could be looked into, because there is, you know, a cost associated with that when you try and correct graffiti. I mean, it's a crime that really, again, it's like property crime. It's tolerated because it's just, you know, juvenile nonsense, and it's not. Graffiti welcomes other crime into your area. If you believe in the broken windows theory, I mean, all it says to big folks is, hey, look, you know, this area is already run down. You know, you can go after the next thing. So we are buying graffiti detectors. We are going to drill down onto the graffiti, because if we can get the graffiti a little bit better under control, again, it stops other crime from occurring. The whole approach will continue to be the low-hanging fruit.
Because sometimes, I mean, graffiti can be on the poles, on the bridges. It's not necessarily on a building, which is why I was questioning whether that was going to be considered part of a property.
It's still considered a nuisance crime,
okay.
But we do not write it off as a nuisance crime. We investigate graffiti. We even have a database that has allowed us to identify particular taggers, as they call themselves.
Right.
And we go out and arrest them, and we have... There's great programs out there where they have to go back and they have to fix all the damage they did, and they have to paint. The one good thing about that piece of it is you almost never see the same offender after they've gotten caught. That's the nice part. And a lot of them just grow out of it. But when you grab one of these kids that are doing it and you interview them, they believe it to be a rite of passage. They don't even know they're doing something wrong. They think it's something that you know, if someone at school did, and then they tell you, hey, yeah, this is what you do, and it's a rite of passage.
But some of these guys have been older. I mean, some of them have been in their 20s, where you would
That's
think at
fact.
That point that they certainly would have grown out of it if they were going to.
No closer to their Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah. And just, if I can take just one second, Councilman Weiner and I were contacted by Lori Kane for letters of support for a grant that the police department is writing. Part of this is, I think, because within our areas, we've been working with them, with Melissa Bell, on graffiti in very specific areas where it's just kind of reoccurring or been on the poles and on the bridges for years and years and never taken care of. We do have cameras in some areas, and we've recently gotten pictures. I know, I don't think there's been any arrests, but the grant that she was applying for, which I thought was extremely innovative, was called a Graffiti Tech GT1 sensor.
Yes.
So when you put it in the high graffiti areas, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm reading out of this is that once you push the aerosol can, the sensor picks up the aerosol and immediately transmits the location to the nearest police officer.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah, it'll actually go into the 911 center, and the 911 center will dispatch the closest car based on, you know, what they see on their screens, and we have folks there that know what they're doing. Those things are expensive. I saw them at a tech show out in Scottsdale, Arizona. But I came back and I said, let's get them, because they'll pay for themselves down the road. So we thank both council people that are endorsing those, us buying those, and we appreciate the letters, because I'd like to make more graffiti arrests and then put an educational piece to it that, you know, graffiti's not okay. And if we get that out there to the kids, it'll be helpful.
Yeah. And just so council knows that Councilman Weiner and I will be bringing forth a grant, because this is a matching Yes. And we have said that we would sponsor the matching portion of the grant.
And again, that lets us get additional detectors. So from the Department of Public Safety, we thank you.
Councilman Smiley?
I just see where the little cans of paint can replace the mace in the pocketbook now, because you can spray them in the face and get a quick police response all at the same time.
Yeah.
Sounds like a win-win to me.
Only if you're in the high graffiti area.
Councilman Street?
Yeah, well, and I understand and empathize with the problem as it relates to taggers, whatever they call them. But in other areas, gangs use graffiti to communicate. Gangs use graffiti to stake out territory. And they're sending clear messages, which are dangerous messages. And so graffiti on both ends of the spectrum is something that just can't be taken lightly.
Hey, I happen to agree with you, sir. And one of the reasons we keep the database on graffiti is so that we track our gangs. So we have a similar database for tattoos. We have the same issues. So.
2 points. Number one, you know, when we talk about heroin use, we talk about substance abuse and folks that, you know, need help in many cases. I think all one has to do is look at Resolution 13-174 that Councilman Street's bringing forth tonight. And we don't always hit home runs with the state of Delaware on everything, but I think this resolution is encouraging the state of Delaware Department of Health and Social Services to take the Stokely Center, which is now vacant. And I applaud Councilman Street's initiative to make the Stokely Center a statewide drug and alcohol treatment facility. So they're the kind of things in partnership and encouraging our state services to work with us. And I certainly don't want to steal any thunder or anything like that, but I'm sitting here thinking we're talking open dialogue about different things, what we look at. This is a perfect resolution to encourage our state health and social services to create something meaningful and worthwhile to our citizens at the Stokely Center.
I happen to concur, sir, completely.
Yeah. Councilman Street.
Well, I was gonna wait till the night, but you opened the door, so I gotta try to come through it. And you know, there's unfortunately, in my opinion, not the kind of empathy and sensitivity for the addicted that at a stake we need to have. And you can follow what's transpired in the public press over the last year, and particularly in my council district in the city, the organizations that are providing services to those who are addicted basically had to shut down and reduce those services. And, you know, addicted folks are not welcome, and we don't have a whole lot of drug treatment facilities. We've got a waiting list at the detox center. So even when we have to pick somebody up off the street who's addicted and intoxicated, they may or may not get in. So I just felt, and others in the community who are very passionate about this, very, very much involved in it, there's a need if we have an opportunity to utilize a facility, to use it for drug treatment and help those who are addicted, need help, want help, and very often can't get help. So, thank you for raising that.
And thank you.
No, you didn't encroach on anything. There's a need to provide services and help people. So,
Councilman Tack, and I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm kind of working around here.
You were talking about this new program and this property crimes and all. We have a component that's available to the public out there on your website called crime mapping that kind of doesn't get updated actually as often as it probably should have, and it's a little bit, you know, quite, you know, hard to use. Is this something that's going to like enhance that? And
no, sir, but I do know what you're talking about, and here's the thing. I had the opportunity to go back and rebuild that wheel, or I could get something new. And the newest thing out there is called MyPD. Mm-hmm. And it's an app for your phone. It'll literally be an app that you push on your iPhone. It'll bring up the Newcastle County Police. and it'll give you much, much better crime maps. It'll give you a lot more detail. It'll give you news releases. It will give you a whole bevy of everything from the organizational chart, and it's very popular in other states, and it's really, ultimately, if you think about it, it's probably one of the most inexpensive things out there. They can pull in so many followers with the Twitter culture and the iPhone culture and the communications that go on among the younger folks. This particular app will have the police department at their fingertips, literally. And so instead of investing in stuff that's kind of getting old and not working that great, including our own website, which we are moving towards updating, the other piece of it will be MyPD, the app that's coming out. And that literally is about $6,000 to have this app. It's not expensive.
You know, two other real fast things, but one is, I guess we still just need to be mindful of, yeah, that's the, I guess, younger generation and the technology we're engaging, but there's also a very, you know, engaged segment of our population. They're seniors that aren't so much into this technology or running around with the iPhones and the apps, but they're the ones that really want to know what's going on in the communities. And that's why we do want to
recover our webpage, sir, and get it back up to where it was, where it was once considered one of the better, more informational webpages out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not picking on anyone, certainly not my friend, the deputy CAO, but when the website got moved over to the government center some years ago, it really kind of lost its zeal and flavor for the police department, and we're having discussions on how we get that back.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful and beneficial. What is the police department's, I guess, commitment now or continue to be towards community crime watches? You know, do you still see this as being vital segments of a component of your operation or not?
Truth? Yeah. Is they start out great, you know, people are really happy with them, they really like being they feel like they're helping the police department, and you really get a lot of buy-in, and then it kind of, the bloom falls off the rose, so to speak, and people lose interest in it, and someone, you know, doesn't want to do the Thursday night neighborhood drive around, and all kinds of things go on with it. Are they helpful? Yes. When you get a core group of decent people, depending on the neighborhood, that really just simply watch out and call 911, those are helpful. But again, when they first start out, they always seem like, you know, they're doing patrols, they're keeping up with everything, and then it just, as time goes on, for whatever reason, they lose interest in it. We advertise it. We like it. We like Crime Watch. Again, even if the sign is just up that says this is a community with Crime Watch, you know, criminals don't like that stuff. They don't like alarm signs. They don't like dogs. They don't like locked doors. They're just not fond of those things.
I just wanted to reconfirm it, because I know I've had a couple communities that have really been trying to, and I've copied you on a recent email, you know, but...
That's all that. Thank
you. I just wanted to make sure we weren't, you know, fostering something that maybe we had not really put a lot of emphasis on anymore or something, because
we still encourage it. Like I said, it just, there's a couple of neighborhoods that are really, really good at it, but it's a commitment.
Oh yeah, and it's a commitment on our part, you know, because we've got to keep them energized, we've got to keep them motivated, and we've got to keep them, you know, out there doing what they need to do with, you know, I guess, whatever, you know, the meetings and
sure,
you know, whatever. So
Deputy CAO.
Hi, Jim McDonald, Executive Office. Comment on a couple things. I heard Councilwoman Kirkpatrick. We have a new application that should be coming online, hopefully before winter sets in, that will be an iPhone type of app. People see graffiti, will be able to shoot it with their phone, geo-marks it, and forwards for processing. Second thing, as I heard, was about the website. We have been approved for, graciously gave us the money to buy the Esri products to update our mapping system, which will be more user-friendly. I don't want to use the word trademarked Google-ish, but it will be Google type of mapping. It'll be a better overlay, it'll be a little faster response. It's the newest technology, so that should be coming within the next few months.
They're the same maps they're using in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll link with Crime View, so speaking to the crime maps that you had earlier, we'll be able to take direct feeds out of the RMS system and populate them.
Thank you. Director Bryant?
Director Bryan, just insofar as the community watch, one thing that we're probably going to do in the very near future is start up our police, citizen police academies here. And I think if you go back to those days, that was one way of getting folks interested in doing it, mm-hmm. and then making it work. So that's on the table right now, along with enhancing our heroin alert programs throughout the middle and high schools throughout Newcastle County. But I think if we could get those academies up and running again, mm-hmm. we will generate a great deal of interest in community watches throughout the county.
Maybe use the National Night Out coming up to do a little awareness kickoff. Like,
We have to put the academy, we will. But the first thing we have to do is put together a plan for this academy again. Mm-hmm. And once we get that in place, then we can advertise it, promote it, and feel comfortable we're going to get a large number of folks to come out and attend that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't have anything else going on.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, why are you not doing anything?
Yeah, right.
Chief Academy class update?
Yes, sir. We are in the 19th week. There are still 23 viable candidates in there. And whenever you get this far along, it usually is an indicator that we're not going to lose anymore. You do lose some in the beginning. It happens in most academies. We are operating right now at 339 sworn with 23 in. So when they graduate, they still have about an eight-week training course where they ride with a field training officer, but that will put us at 362. That's still eight below our authorized strength, but we are moving swiftly towards the October Academy, which will begin on October 7th. The idea behind the October Academy is that we will have an academy every October. It doesn't matter if we need five officers or 50. Because the way we do it right now is we wait and we wait and we wait, the attrition rate builds, and then we all of a sudden say, okay, we have to get an academy together because the attrition rate's too high. And we put an academy in, and instead of being on the road in June, July, and August, harvest time for the police officers, they're sitting in the chief seats, and they're drawing our instructors, which we need on the street, because we have to teach them how to be Mr. Police Officer and Mrs. Police Officer, and it doesn't work. But if you do it in October, you have your class every October, October, November, December, January, February, March, they graduate. They train on the road with their FTOs April and May, June, July, and August when we're busy, we have newly minted police officers. So from now on, every October, there should be an academy. And that's the right way to do it. Probably should have happened a while back, but you know, it's hard to get the finances nailed down and to get the buy-in from everybody, but now that we have the support of council in these matters and the exec's office, I don't see any reason why we won't be able to have an October Academy every year. Makes the most sense. And that's where we're at, sir.
Great report. Councilman Collins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many did we lose from this class?
From memory, sir, three. So, and that happens. Sometimes you lose more. Sometimes you lose less. It's just people come into the academy with the hopes of wanting to be a police officer, and the challenge is just a little bit greater than they realized. One person in particular, remain nameless, just said, I'm afraid of this. I had no idea it was this scary. Goodbye.
I don't blame
him. That's what happens when you do a Wilton drive-through.
That'll do it.
Anything under other chief?
No, sir. No,
director?
No, sir.
Just appreciate everybody's time.
Councilman Cartier and then Director Bryant.
Okay. Councilman? No, let the director go.
Okay.
Just
Director Bryant.
Again, ALMA has been in place since November of last year.
Yes, sir.
And again, I said it before, this is my 37th or 8th year in law enforcement. I've never seen anyone like him. He has turned this organization around in these very few months.
Thanks, sir.
The attitudes of our police officers, it's like night and day. We had a revolving door before he took over. Folks were leaving, going everywhere else. One guy we were talking this morning went to collect trash. we can't force people to leave. You know, we don't want them to leave. But he has turned it around. He, along with his staff, they've done a tremendous job over the last, you know, few months. And I applaud him, as I do all my chiefs, for doing an outstanding job in getting us back to where we were. When I left, we were at the top of the heap. We're working our way back there right now in law enforcement in the state of Delaware. And I give this young man...
Not so young anymore.
...in a black suit. I give him a lot of credit for it. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
One, just mention something. You're down in the Tampa area. My understanding, not just from predictive policing standpoint, but something you may be interested in when you're down there is they also utilize predictive emergency medical response. And so, you know, what they do is they use statistics to analyze what time of day of the week, what areas, and their advanced life support is deployed around to different areas where there are higher percentage of runs are occurring by time of day and day of the week. So it's in that county area and the Tampa area that they're doing it.
When I'm down there, Shaw, I'll ask about it. It's very curious. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Any other questions, input, Councilman Cartier?
I just want to return to talk just briefly about what I see with this heroin situation. I think we're witnessing what amounts to a gigantic human tragedy going on. So many young people are getting caught up in this. It seems like all the drug arrests that are going on involve heroin predominantly. I mean, I can tell you from my district, there is a methadone clinic in Claymont on the Philadelphia Pike. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young people are involved in that program. And that's all treating heroin addiction. And it's truly astounding, tragic, and, you know, we need to do more to prevent this. And whatever we can do, we should do it. And this is just going to be a problem that's going to be with us for years at this point.
Chief? I don't want to belabor the point, but let me just give you some ideas of what's occurring with heroin in Delaware and some questions that no one seems to be able to answer. I'll start with what's occurring with heroin. It's so cheap that the drug dealers are buying placebos because people want to buy their oxycodone at $20 a pop for a single pill. But since it's so expensive to get, they just grab a placebo, they put a drop in, high-grade heroin on it, and they sell that. So now the person who believes, you know, they're getting an oxycodone is now addicted to heroin, the most addictive drug that I've ever been told by anybody, including the DEA and the FBI National Academy. It's the most addictive drug in the world, heroin. So now you've got people addicted to heroin who may have had a mild pill problem. That's one small piece of it. Here are a couple of questions no one can answer. Why is heroin so cheap in Delaware? Why do people drive from major cities such as New York and Philadelphia and Baltimore, sometimes up to 2 hours, to Delaware to buy heroin? Why is the heroin in Delaware so pure? No one knows. No one's been able to answer this. I've asked DEA, the director, and I have sat with the agents. No one knows the answer. You know, this isn't the black tar heroin coming out of Mexico. This is 70, 75, and 80% pure heroin. At some point, Councilman Cartier's comments are going to come to fruition. A bad batch of heroin is going to go out, and what's going to result in that is massive overdoses. Somewhere between 50 and maybe 150 people could die in a single weekend if it happens. And I'm not much of a, you know, worrywart. I don't doomsday on stuff. But the heroin problem in Delaware is largely ignored, and it is in our face, and something is going to happen. There's no way it's not going to happen. And many of these shootings that are occurring are, in fact, over the heroin trade. All of this stuff is tied together. There is no way to disconnect the drugs from the property crime, from the turf wars, and from the shootings, and the gangs. And no one knows. No one can tell you why in the heck is heroin so pure in Delaware that guys are packing up and driving down from New York to get it, and why are we allowing it? What's going on? We're we're taking thousands and thousands of bags of heroin off the street. If you're sitting in the TAPS meeting, you're hearing a single arrest, 800 bags of heroin. You know, a single arrest, 2,000 hits of heroin. Last week, 40 pounds of marijuana, often tainted with heroin, and, you know, $60,000. I mean, clearly, these guys are in a business, and they know why the heroin's so pure, and they know why you come to Delaware to get it. We're not investing in the right areas. We have to put additional officers in the DEA as the task force, as a force multiplier. I mean, they're bringing the overtime money to the table. They're bringing the cars to the table. You have to face the tough decision and say, look, we're going to spare another officer out of patrol. We're going to put another officer in the DEA. Because all the officers in patrol, again, that's reactive. Even though we're making it more proactive, it's not the answer to combating heroin in Delaware. The number one drug in this state, and again, driven by the property crime, largely ignored for years.
Councilman Street.
Well, I agree with everything he just said. I agree with the concern that Councilman Cartier made, and I'm extremely concerned, I guess, was 4 years ago when I was running from community meeting to community meeting about the number of deaths that were occurring because of the bad heroin on the street. It was a major problem then, and I fear it's going to come back. But I want to go back to the reason I raised my hand is because of Director Bryant. And, you know, he walked up and gave his chief praise as well. You know, I think you deserve some of that praise as well. Number one, it's who you want. Number two, in my opinion, from where I sit, you've had a tremendous impact. And one thing that I appreciate is the fact that you're available, and when there's questions raised, you answer those questions. And yesterday, might as well tell it. You know, I raised a concern, and you literally tongue-lashed me and put me in my place, and I had to think about the reality of what you were saying versus what I was questioning. And I can't do anything but respect that and appreciate that. And so all that doesn't need to be held in private. I think everybody needs to know that your leadership, your attitude and perspective, I think is helping, making a tremendous difference, and certainly it's an asset to what I try to do when people call me about problems and concerns. So I appreciate you as much as you appreciate your chief.
Thank you, Councilman. Public comment? Hearing none.
Call motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Colonel.